If you're looking to save some money on your wireless plan, take a look at Visible Wireless. They're a transparent wireless carrier with nothing to hide. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, where you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. One line wireless, just $25 a month with taxes and fees included. That's unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Switch now at Visible.com. You shouldn't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. Like Visible, the wireless company making wireless visible.
Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Hi, I'm Alexis Ohanian. You may know me as one of the co-founders of Reddit, but more recently, a large part of my identity is being a father to my wonderful daughters. In my podcast, Business Dad, I hope to open the conversation about working parents a bit. You'll get to hear from a wide range of business dads, from Rainn Wilson and Guy Raz to Todd Carmichael and Shane Battier, to find out how they balance being a dad with a successful career. Business Dad is available now, so be sure to listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
What's happening, friends? Welcome to Podcast Unlocked, episode 423, emergency edition. There's green alert. We need like a green siren in here. The Xbox Series X has been unveiled at the Game Awards, so we had to do a second show this week. There's a lot to talk about. Some games, some hardware, the look of the box, the name of it. We'll cover it all coming up right now on Podcast Unlocked.
Podcast Unlocked.
What's happening, friends? Ryan McCaffrey with you, hosting alongside Brandon Tyrell.
Hello, hello.
You hanging in there, buddy?
Tired. It was a late night.
It was a late night.
It was a late night and early morning.
It was indeed. Mark Medina, thank you for joining us.
Just happy to be involved. Subbing, it was a late night.
Subbing in for the lazy Destin Legarry.
Oh, I'm going up. My mom's here. Okay. Xbox just got announced, Destin.
Come on, Destin. Priorities, buddy. Miranda Sanchez, good morning.
Hello, good morning. Honestly, if my mom were here, I'd just make her sit in the corner and be like, hey, mom. Or actually, no, I'd just go send her to play pinball. She loves pinball.
We just got a new pinball machine. We got a Jurassic Park pinball machine, and it's super cool. I was over playing a little of that last night. Anyway, yes, welcome to episode 423 of Podcast Unlocked. You know why we're here. You saw what went down last night at the Game Awards. One of the first things that you saw was this strange trailer. And Jeff Keighley, to his credit, he the way he set it up, I did not see it coming. Mm-hmm. I thought, okay, this is just going to be some big game reveal, and the trailer starts, and you at least I thought it was a game.
Yeah. I did too. I thought it was a Sony exclusive for a second. It checked all the right boxes. Very cinematic, kind of a
Dark.
Yeah. Well, dark, but like inspirational. You know, they have those quotes about dreams, and I was like, okay. And then the ground started to like bubble up like it does in Death Stranding when the time falls. Like, Death Stranding 2?
And then a car drives in and you're like, wait what? A minute.
And then suddenly soccer.
It's soccer. Yeah, I was like.
You get that like box silhouette in the water and you're like, what is happening?
Yeah, and so like, wait, this isn't a game, is it? And then Master Chief shows up.
And as soon as you saw Master Chief, I was like, no, they are not.
So I think I was in the middle of writing something then too, and I was just like, wait. I need to put this down.
I missed the end of the trailer because as soon as I saw the sort of rectangle in the water, I was like, oh, crap. Get to work.
And then you recognized it mid-trailer. You were like, oh, they're doing the name of it, aren't they?
So here's the thing. I'm just going to stop guessing because I have no idea what their marketing plan is now. Like, I don't get it.
Well, we're going to talk all about that. So, yeah, let's start with the name.
Yeah.
Xbox Series X. Now, this... Phil made me think of the Phil quote from the quote was from XO19, but the story kind of caught fire via IGN this week, which was a quote from Phil where he said he had told Stavivor.whatever, I think .com. And then somebody told me they're a New Zealand site, so it might not be .com. Anyway, Stavivor, it said, our naming convention has been around what we think the capabilities are. So I put out a tweet earlier this week that, you know, people weighed in on their own opinions. I thought, well, what about the Xbox
E. You know, E, E for exponentially more powerful, entertainment for everyone. It's the fifth letter of the alphabet. And if you count, if you go original Xbox 360 and the one and the X, this would be the fifth major revision. The S wasn't a major revision. So maybe I'm reaching there. But okay, well, I could see them doing something like that. And I wasn't, I guess, that far off. It did involve a letter, just not the letter E. Xbox Series X. What did you guys think?
Xbox Series 10. No.
We're going Windows style now, yeah.
Yeah, I just wrote what feels like the thousandth blurb this holiday season, saying that, and it's actually what you have here, which is I already have an X in my pocket. It's my iPhone.
Your
X,
iPhone.
Right? And so it's kind of like, it makes me think that like what you have here is like, that's based on specs, it's definitely the Anaconda. And that the Lockhart, if it exists, is going to be the Xbox S or XR or something like that.
Yeah, I mean,
that, and it can go on kind of forever like that.
Right. It's it does seem like the choice of the letter X is very intentional and very specific, obviously, when you're naming something like this. And that, yeah, if they have chosen to reuse the letter X, which they're using right now as their flagship console right now, that the Lockhart, the lower spec discless version, is probably going to be the Series S.
I imagine so. Yeah.
Miranda, what do you think of this name?
I think it's confusing. I think, so just an anecdotal story. When I was younger and like not really in the know with a lot of the games industry stuff, when the Wii U came out, I thought the Wii U was just an additional controller peripheral. I did not know it was a whole new system.
Same.
That was also me being like younger and not really understanding what was happening. I think this is going to be a similar problem with people who are not knowledgeable about the industry. It's like, okay, well, this one looks different, but it also has an X. But oh, but the Xbox One X is right there, but the Xbox Series X, like, what? Where is like the order in that? You know, like, I think PlayStation has something going for it with it just being numbers, right? You cannot miss what is the next thing, and that's I think going to be harder for people. I mean, I'm specifically thinking about parents or grandparents who are going out and buying gifts,
non-hardcore gamers.
Yeah, and they're like, oh, my kid wanted this new Xbox. Yeah. But which one is the new one, and which is
the
like
X.
The more powerful
one? Well, there's two X's.
Right. We ran a fun little thought experiment yesterday, which is when Billy's 70-year-old grandmother goes to Best Buy. To buy Billy the console that he wants. She knows it's an Xbox.
Hey, Grandma.
And she gets there and she says, theoretically, holiday 2020, on the shelves, you're still going to see Xbox One S's.
Of course.
Xbox One X's. Yep. Xbox Series X's.
Mm-hmm. And possibly Series S's.
Possibly, right? So... first of all, I'm sorry, Billy's grandma. Like, that is a terrible, like, position to be put in.
This is the weirdest console invented since LBJ was president. Like, what is going on?
I think it's confusing now. I understand, I think, where they're going. It's kind of in the quote. Our naming conventions has been around what we think the capabilities are. It's not the capabilities of the machine. It's the capabilities of the family.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So the Series X is their entry level thing. And then I imagine, you know, like with the One X, we see a mid generation upgrade and the Series XL.
I think
maybe? Or XS if you want to get really confusing.
Or X Max to go straight iPhone or X Pro, which Sony's used.
I think going specifically with the X is the problem just because we did just have something come out that ended with X and Xbox.
Yeah,
and I think that's just a little clumsy in a way. I don't think the name itself is bad if I'm just looking at that. It's like, oh, well, obviously we get it. But I'm thinking about like people as a whole. It's a little weird.
Since it was announced, I've no less than three or four times called the new console the Xbox One Series X.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
because
it'll,
like,
it'll take some
that's
time
what's kind of rolling off
yeah,
the top.
Here's the thing. Get rid of the one.
Because it's only, it's just, they're changing one for series.
Right.
It's still the same thing. And so I just,
fast forward
when you look
2 years.
At it,
yeah.
Yeah, no, 100%. For sure.
It's when the Xbox Ones are all dead and gone. I mean, RIP, you were a great console. We're just going to be talking about, oh, do you have an Xbox? Yeah. Do you have the Series X, the Series S, the Series L? Do you have the Series R? Like, which Xbox, which series do you have?
Which letter of the alphabet is your Xbox?
And that makes a ton of sense. Yeah. As long as we're all in that one sort of walled garden of series letter, like, it's cool. But right now, there's that confusion.
Right. I don't think the series part is the problem. Yeah. I think it's specifically going with X.
Well, and I think what can help that, what can help Billy's grandma is...
Agnes.
If Microsoft is doing their job correctly next fall, which they will, the marketing will, you know, the Series X will be all over television and all forms of media next fall, and Xbox One X will still exist, of course, you're right, but it will not be marketed.
Mm-hmm.
It will,
sure.
The push will be for the Series X, possibly Series S, but Series will be the thing that is just hammered home in everyone's minds in advertisement after advertisement after advertisement on any media you can possibly think of. So that should hopefully help do the job for Microsoft, even when you're dealing with parents and grandparents and people buying gifts that aren't, that might be susceptible to that confusion.
Well, and I worked Target Electronics, you know, years and years ago, and I do picture the hurdles of like, what's the difference between the One X and the Series X? And it's like, well, will this game play on the, that game will play on both.
Yes.
And it's like, but okay, but then only these will work on the Series X because of the full backwards compatibility. It's like, okay, but like, you know, Agnes is like, well, there's only 10 of those. This one can play the whole library. Like, it becomes this weird. It's on retailers to figure and marketing to kind of promote it correctly.
And developers, right? Yeah. Like Call of Duty 2020 is going to have a One X.
It'll be on both.
An Xbox One version and a Series X version. So, you know, like I said, the next 2 years are going to be really confusing for parents, retailers, Agnes, developers.
Poor Agnes.
Basically, until
she's trying her best.
Until I understand what they're doing with the series, because theoretically, we're never going to see an Xbox 3 or whatever. Theoretically, the series will just continue to iterate. Mm-hmm. So you'll have a Series X 2, maybe?
Yeah, what's interesting is I know when the Xbox One came
that
around.
That is the problem. That our producer in the studio has their iPhone out. And I said Series, and Siri went off. And I actually, when you were talking about that, I thought, oh my God, that's really, really close to.
Yeah, When I play video games, I'll always be like, are you serious? And it's like, bing! And I'm like, no!
But yeah, when the Xbox One was coming around, I think I'm pretty sure I was on this podcast advocating for the name to just be Xbox.
Again.
Like, the same way that Apple eventually got sick of naming iPads and just called the new one, like, seven iPads in, iPad. We're going,
this is the
iPad. And they're kind of doing that now.
Which is also confusing to be fair.
Xbox. But then just Series insert letter here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
So, it'll take a little time. And you know, the reality is when you're not doing Xbox 1, 2, 3, 4, the way that Sony has simply gone in numerical order, there are inevitably going to be people in and out of the gaming community that some of them are going to totally love the name and think, yep, that's cool. I'm on board with that. And there are going to be some people that's like, that's dumb. I hate it. You're not going to please everybody.
No.
Whereas PlayStation 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 might not be exciting, but it's just obvious and everybody gets
it.
So.
The thing that's going to be weird with that is if they decide to launch with two consoles, they're immediately out of the door going to have to do PlayStation 5 and PlayStation 5
that's
Pro
a good
or something
point.
Like that.
Yeah, that is a good point. If and when they do that, they've got a bit of a bigger problem on their
where
hands.
Where they get to just be like Xbox Series X, Xbox Series S.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually, I never thought of like XL. Sounds cool. Could be cool.
Yeah.
You
all right.
That one.
Now I want to talk about the box itself, because we didn't just get the name. We got to see what the actual console looks like. If you haven't seen it yet, just Google image it right now on your phone or computer, wherever you're listening to us. It is a vertically oriented tower, though it can, confirmed, it can sit down and go horizontal, lay down horizontally as well. But it is a small square in the sort of base, and then it is a tallish rectangle. It's approximately 2.5 to 3 Xbox One controllers tall if you're stacking them on top of each other.
Yeah.
So I think it's gorgeous.
I'm very
in love with the design of it. It's really pretty.
It looks awesome.
It's very simple. And, like, really the only detailing you get is kind of on the top grating or so far that we've seen.
Mm-hmm.
And I do like it. I think I've come around to it a little bit more. I was kind of – I like how the Xbox One X is specifically designed, and like it has just like very fine detailing and like layering in its parts. Mm-hmm. And I think that just looks really nice and sleek. Mm-hmm. I think you have like a good note here that it just definitely fits in with like home assistants, and it kind of looks like another little tower, another little thing. I don't know. I generally do like it though. I just like having that, like, just little design details. But I guess, like, the top grading, again, is kind of where that kind of fits in.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I agree. I think it's great. I think it looks great. I think it's modern. I think it's practical. You know, it doesn't have crazy sharp angles or edges.
It's going to be easy to carry around, too, in your backpack.
Yeah.
It's
going
to be easy to carry around, and it does feel like sort of an evolution of it. Like, look, it doesn't need to do anything fancy on the outside because it does a lot on the inside. And that's the one thing I appreciated more about – I did not like the original design of the Xbox One. So I like
the larger VCR type.
The VCR type one. I liked it about as I disliked it about as much as I disliked the PlayStation 4 with its sort of offsetting angles. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think this is great. It's practical, and to Miranda's point, if you're looking for those details, you know, that top concave with the sort of what's the word for it?
Corrugated.
I don't know.
Well, like a mesh type thing.
Yeah, but yeah.
It's like a vent look to it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I am really looking forward to the inevitable matte white version of it with, mm-hmm. you know, the air holes.
That'll be very Apple when that day comes. Mm-hmm. It'll be a real Apple looking device.
I'm looking forward to it, but I think it looks sleek. I think it's not going to take up more room than you really have earmarked in a entertainment system right now.
Mm-hmm. It is. A lot of what I'm seeing online and the reactions to it, I think people, now we don't have one here, but we've literally been studying this all morning. Like literally, it's smaller than I think a lot of people mm-hmm. realize. It's not large. It's you know, it's just like that for the base, and it's, you know, it's not a big thing. It's like a little like boutique gaming PC, like a sleekly designed gaming PC.
It looks like one of the oldest Steam boxes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
In fact, like Bo, our new tech editor, was telling me there's a Corsair something that was, you know, released a little while ago that's only slightly larger and the same form factor as this. So we have something to go off.
Right.
But I measured the optical drive on the One X, and it's about 5 inches. Mm-hmm. And just judging by the picture and doing a lot of eyeballing, my guess is this thing is 6x11x6.
Okay.
Yeah.
Or,
it's
12.
It's kind of got to be for this to be able to fit in it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you need room on either side of that. And if you look at the front, if they use the same optical drive, which I imagine they're going to use.
I wouldn't be surprised if it's literally the same drive that's in the Xbox One.
I mean,
you
mass manufacture or mass purchase those parts. You know, the optical drive starts slightly above the flush, bottom of the console. You've got a little bit of gap. You have the optical drive. You have a little bit more gap than you have the button. And then if you were using that as a gauge to be like, all right, can you fit another optical drive up there? You can. So I imagine it's probably 11 inches, maybe a little, mm-hmm. maybe 11.25, 11.5.
Mm-hmm. Nope.
But yeah, it's going to be half a foot by a foot, essentially.
And I also really like, they showed in the video, you know, that Miranda, you're talking about sort of the concave mesh ventilation on top. And when it's on, there is a cool green glow.
I didn't see that.
Yeah,
it's awesome. There's a really,
it looks like it has RGB, which makes me wonder if that's going to be like configurable. Cause that's kind of the thing with PCs is them to light up and you want them to be like super pretty, but then also at the same time, because these home devices, like your Alexa is supposed to be able to just kind of fit in and blend anywhere. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so it does make me think like, can you turn that fan off? You know, I also wonder, and this is something me and John, our producer, were talking about earlier, was so it's made to be able to go sideways. So there's two parts of the Xbox we haven't seen, which is the back and the bottom. Mm-hmm. The top has that nice big vent. It makes me wonder if that's the top, if the bottom is going to have a vent like that as well. And if it does, it'll need legs to be able to ventilate.
It would be the right side. So if you have to lay sideways for your optical drive to go in your discs.
Yeah.
It would be on the other side.
Right. So that's the side we haven't seen. So you would assume there's going to be a vent there.
I would presume
pulling air in.
I would presume the other vent. So the vent on the top and then probably on the back
where the
ports
IO
are.
Is.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
There's definitely going to be vents there. And so it kind of makes me wonder, like, if you slide it in, that the original Xbox had that problem where there was ventilation on all sides and you're like, okay, I don't want to suffocate this thing. So it kind of matters where you put it, where the One X, S, PS4, like they're all just like front to back. And so you can kind of slide it in somewhere. So I do wonder where this thing could fit or if vertical is going to kind of be the its primary.
Remember, airflow, too, yeah. So the original Xbox One, mm-hmm. The VCR that you didn't care for, but one thing that it did have going for it, and Microsoft had kind of admitted this, so admit it like it's a bad thing, but it's a good thing, they over-engineered the cooling system because mm-hmm. they absolutely could not afford and did not want a red ring of death. Remember, sure. So it had a huge fan on top when you were laying it down horizontally. Right. So it was pulling air out of the top. Mm-hmm. And that seems to be kind of what they're going for with Series X as well. Is just
blow the hot
that
air
out of the top. Yeah, and just get rid of it that way and just thermally ventilate it that way.
Another thing that I'm really excited about this design is just, I think the presentation of it is going to lend itself really well to those kind of creative PAX versions of the Xbox consoles they do every mm-hmm. year. Like, I know hardly anybody gets those, but it's like really cool to see how they let like developers and designers like kind of do cool things with their consoles. So I know it's like not something, again, that we can really do much with, but I do like the whole idea of like decorating your console in like a different way.
Yeah. Or the bundle consoles too.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder if we'll get a Halo Infinite Special Edition that's, you know, either green or got some sort of cool design going on with it. You know, and they might play around with something like that either right at launch or shortly thereafter. Yeah. I also imagine, we haven't obviously physically had it in front of us. If you have an Xbox One X out there, you know what I'm talking about. The X, we know it's a very powerful console. It's reasonably small in a more, you know, rectangular format. The X is dense. That thing is heavy. And I expect, and again, this isn't a bad pounds, good thing or a bad thing, but just as an observation, I would expect, given how much power we know is in the Series X and the fact that we can almost guarantee, don't know for sure, I can't imagine this thing's going to have a power brick. Microsoft has learned, they know they can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
So integrated power, like, I think this thing's, it's probably going to be like a, just this very dense
object.
It'll be a brick.
It's going to look small, and then you pick it up and go, whoa.
Yeah, there's some
heavier than I thought.
Yeah. The One X was 8.5 pounds, 8.4 pounds, I think. And so I imagine this thing is going to be heavier, you think?
I'll bet they find a way to make it a little lighter.
Make it a little bit lighter.
Because it does seem overall smaller in volume than the Xbox One X.
It definitely does.
Don't know for sure. Yeah.
And there's less room to like need to fill with just plastic, right?
I mean, the nice part is too, you know, the console, yes, it's a lot more powerful. They're four times more powerful than the Xbox One X, according to the Phil Spencer blog post on the Xbox Wire. But, you know, the system on chips, they get smaller and smaller every time. If the power goes up, the size goes down, and when it's smaller, that means it runs cooler as well. So, most generally speaking, I wouldn't be at all surprised if it ends up a little lighter. And Phil also said, and I love this, that they've emphasized that it is very, very quiet, which the S and the X are as well.
I had a problem with that.
They really haven't. Microsoft has just made such strides in really in their industrial design overall. If you go back, you know, the original Xbox, their first attempt, I mean, it was a kind of a garish box with a literal giant X on the top of it.
It was a statement.
And it was big and it was heavy, and there were all the jokes about how big it is. And then we went to the 360, where they really, like, they put in a huge effort, you know, with the sort of, they consulted the Astro, and it was the inhale design where it kind of came in the middle. And it, you know, it was a nice looking console, but of course fatally flawed by the internal architecture with the red ring of death and the heat issues. And then, you know, they did redesign that into the slim, the Xbox 360 S, which totally solved the cooling problems and was a nice, you know, you could see them kind of moving forward. And then with the One, big but sort of simple, the capacitive touch button, which was super fancy.
I hated.
Well, because your cat or dog could walk by it.
My cat turned on all the time.
They walk by it.
You walk by it. The one I had on my desk for like years would just turn on and it's like when I sat down.
People would always bump my desk and just,
And then you're sitting there and you hear that, bring. Yeah.
And then to the S and the X, which are just very minimalist design, which I am a big fan in basically everything, in like cars, consumer products. Like I like
Cybertrucks.
I just like
DeLorean.
Yeah, it's yeah. So and they've taken that even further here with Series X, where it's a very minimalist design. There is really nothing unnecessary on its design in any way, shape, or form whatsoever. And what a Twitter follower of mine pointed out that in a way I hadn't quite considered it. This was a smart way to put it. The Xbox Series X, it is literally an X Series X. It is an Xbox.
It sure is.
It's literally an Xbox.
It's like an X rectangle.
So we've taken it to its final form. It's a literal Xbox. But yeah, I think the design of it is tremendous. And Microsoft, this isn't the first console to have gone away from a rectangular box. I mean, Nintendo has been doing that for a long time.
This is just a screen.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I do, and not that people buy consoles based on what they look like, but I would be surprised if Sony got as adventurous with the PS5 industrial design as Microsoft did. And I'm not trying to say that as a fanboy thing, but just Sony has traditionally been a bit more conservative with their hardware design. And I say that in a way, the way I mean this is that I appreciate that Microsoft is I won't say thinking outside the box, because that would be...
I mean, it's pretty low-hanging fruit, but go ahead.
I love the design of it, and I didn't expect it, which I like. I like that it's an unexpected design, and I do like that it's minimalist, and it's quiet, and it's going to be super powerful. So
it looks like a PC. It really does.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of people try to use that as a slight against it. Like, no, it's...
No.
That's what it is. It is a PC that plays, that does nothing but play video games and run entertainment apps for you.
Yeah.
Well, and I've been looking at a lot of PC builds lately, and it's like you can get, all the rage years and years ago were these big full tower PCs, these like servers.
Yeah.
And then they've gotten smaller and smaller. And now I've seen some that like pre-built, who knows how they're built, but people are building PCs where it's like there's ribbons going from the board to the video card. So that way the video card doesn't have to sit on top of it, but can be, kind of flush with it. And it's like that seems to be the new trend, is getting these like smaller things. Also because it fits with your TV.
Absolutely.
Because that's the thing with like a computer has almost never, no matter how fancy they look, they almost never look good, right? Like not that computers don't look good, but it's always this giant box next to your monitor, or it's a giant box, under. So then people are going for these designs that it can kind of fit on your...
I think like the smaller designs have been a thing for a while now, though.
Sure.
Like they can get really compact. I think the traditional idea of, even look at the Mac computers, right?
Yep.
Like you have a trash can. Like literally have one.
Yeah.
Today.
Yeah.
And I think they have one too. Like they can get like pretty creative with them.
I think it's cyclical, right? Like fashion always comes back into style.
Right.
Right.
Whereas
right.
like, do you remember like Zoolander, where he like pulled out his little cell phone and was like, and that was in vogue back then. And then, we moved into iPhone and then iPhone Max. And
right.
Now they're iPhone Max.
And, it's like you always see those grids where the phones are huge and then they get small and then now they're getting big.
And then it's like, why are we going small when we can make a statement introducing Godzilla,
I think it looks cool.
I see that with form factors as well. I'm very curious to see the PS5 because the PS2 was, very practical. It did have some fun angles, but the PS3 was
similar.
What
was curvy?
It was like a record player.
The joke with that was the George Foreman grill. That was the one that everybody went for.
So you went with the George Foreman, and then you have the offset angles because it's aggressive, and the design of something says a lot about like how they're trying to market it. So I'm very curious because I think the bigger question here is why go so practical with console designs, especially looking at Xbox. Is it because sort of the video game audience is getting older and appreciate more attractive, sleeker?
I think it's something that Miranda hit on earlier about the home assistant devices that everybody has now. And it's because, Microsoft, the goal is still to be a key part of your living room that was the goal from literally day one of the Xbox program. And this, in sort of
tower
and fitting in with that sort of home assistant kind of boutique gaming PC vibe, this will be a very welcome thing in the living room. Like it's not a thing you want to hide away. Like, oh, that's my son's, that's my son's video game console. Like, don't let the company see that when they come over. Like, no, it's a beautiful, cool thing.
It's a widely presentable design.
Yes.
Like, no matter what taste you have, like, if you want something cute like me, or if you just want something that's super sleek and minimalist, like, it's got that.
And they'll come out with a hot pink version and the C-3PO version. And
they will make those collector's editions, and there's probably ways you can change it up. But if you start with something that's easier and, I think, more acceptable for, like, kind of everybody, then you're already starting at a good point.
Yeah.
And I think we've constantly seen, like, gaming systems move away from looking like toys.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yes, kind of that's a good way to put
like
it, too.
When they were out. It's like, oh, look, we got these fun cartridges, and they slip in the top, and, like, the original PlayStation definitely looked kind of toyish.
That's a good
Whereas
point.
Xbox, I think, has always looked very modern and very, like, serious in a way. Not in a bad way, but it's just more presentable. Generally, it's like, this matches right next to your VCR or your DVD player, and it doesn't look like it's something that's there for the kids.
I would love to see somebody smarter than I am do a write-up about sort of following the correlation of, as video games move out of that shameful thing you do in the basement to, oh, they're toys for kids, to, oh, they're toys for teenagers, into now an industry that is bigger than music and movies combined annually. Mm-hmm. It is now an accepted, maybe more accepted part of society.
Yeah, mainstream part of entertainment.
And the design reflections of the devices that power that experience are starting to evolve as well and look like products that you would find in the home of a, you know, well-cultured family or whatever.
And when I think of Alexa devices, like, I remember when I got one for the first time, I was like, oh, there's no lights on it. There's nothing, right? It just sits there until you say something, then it lights up. The Xbox Series X, we've only seen it technically on with the light on. No, with the power switch.
Oh, yeah.
The little power button.
Oh, the white.
I would assume when that is off, this is just going to be a black box.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
You know, that's just kind of invisible until you want to use it.
Yeah.
And then it's going to light
Especially up with the fan. I
think it's going
to
look really
great. Way to put it. There's two more things I want to talk about. You know, we talk about the console getting smaller. Well, it's not the only thing. The controller is changing a little bit. Now, they did not show the controller last night, but we've heard it described now, our friends at GameSpot. And it is slightly smaller.
Yay.
Not in a huge, big difference way, but it is. Their goal was, they said that their sort of research-focused testing,
mm-hmm.
that the Xbox One controller, they found like a 95% satisfaction rate or sort of, you know, comfort rate. And this new design gets that up to a 98. So they're just tweaking it. So it is a bit smaller,
mm-hmm.
which it'll be probably now a bit closer in size to the DualShock, 4 or 5, but probably not in a meaningful way. Borba's got a...
Right, so they showed... They showed the controller, but not close
right,
by
right, thank
itself.
You. Yeah, that's... Yeah.
So we do have images of, like, what it will look like.
Right.
And it does not really look that different.
It is super comfortable.
As far as, like, the size. I think the size, it's maybe just, like, kind of squeezing things in just a little bit.
Yeah, I think instead of here, you're going to, like, be there.
And the other two notable differences are it's got a dedicated share button, which Phil, in their Xbox Wire blog post, without naming Sony, literally just admitted,
We looked at what our competitors were doing, and we found points that they
just... Well, there's no more, you know, Xbox record that. So now the only way to share stuff is to push the menu, right? Share button.
There are things that Microsoft has standardized across the industry, and there are things that Sony has standardized, and the share button is one of them.
I don't care whose idea it was.
No,
like,
it's a good
idea. Share button, when you're playing it, I don't have to be like, hold on, Xbox button, scroll down. All right.
Press Y.
Press Y
to capture that.
Yeah. Remember.
Am I capturing 720 or 1080? I can't remember. Yep. I think it's, you're playing, something really cool happens, you press a button, press it again to go back. That's it. That's perfect.
It's the slightly smaller size, the share button, and then they are borrowing the hybrid D-pad from the Elite Series 2 controller, which is wonderful because that's a fantastic D-pad that feels great and really gets the job done. So,
And this really answers our question
when we did
our show about the Elite Series 2. We were like, look, what is the new Xbox controller going to offer? And is it going to sort of eclipse this? And the answer is absolutely not. Like, that is still going to be the premium controller for the next generation until the Series 3, I imagine.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's, it's we don't know if it's got an internal battery. I presume not, because that's a thing that would probably go in the $180 version. Yeah. So it's probably going to be, my guess is it's going to be AA battery powered as the last
with a USB-C port.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly correct. So we'll find out about that. But yeah, the thing with the Xbox controller is if they're doing exactly what they should do, which is make small, subtle improvements, because if you'd ruin, there's nowhere to go, but there's not a lot of room to keep going, because the controller is, I'm sorry, like, it is unequivocally the best
gamepad. You need to apologize for that. That is, yeah.
It is unequivocally the best,
how dare
best game
you?
Controller.
We're going to offend our Sony audience right now.
No, I'm offended.
Hey, I'm not saying that the DualShock, you can't also like it, and you can't also like the Switch Pro controller, but
they're
Xbox One
fine controllers.
Controller is just tremendous. I mean, you know, it's funny. Going back on the 360, I remember we were all like, man, this is a great controller.
Mm, yeah.
This thing's fantastic. And if you hold a 360 controller
right?
now, it
feels
like
enormous.
Hot trash.
It's garbage.
It's hot
the thumbsticks feel terrible.
Because it's what the Xbox One did wasn't so much, it didn't radically change the shape or function
the materials.
Of the 360. Yeah, it's the materials and the build,
and the
quality,
build quality
that are so much better. And so that's
like
really.
You hold an Xbox One. This is going to get really confusing. You hold an Xbox One controller and it feels solid and it feels like you have a good piece of technology in your hand. Then you grab a 360 controller and it feels kind of like a plastic toy.
It does.
Well, and the thumbsticks are like, they're like really big and really rubbery. And then they had
the grips come off.
And then they had the dots that just went away instantly. Yeah. Where the Xbox controller, because of that hard plastic concave, still feel good.
That's all I'm looking for out of the Series X controller is just improve, you know, build quality and material refinements. Yeah. And, you know, I'm curious to hold the slightly smaller controller and see how it feels in my hands.
What if that's what they call it, the slightly smaller controller?
SSC?
There you go. Series SSC.
It was really nice to see them present a new controller, because I kind of thought they weren't really going to do anything since they're kind of carrying everything else over, which is awesome.
Yeah.
But it was a good little surprise.
Oh, the fact that you can use your One X controllers on the Series X.
And your Series X controllers on the One.
Yes, so the compatibility goes both ways. Thank you for bringing that up. Yeah, any of your current controllers will work moving forward, and when you get the new one, it'll work moving back.
So cool.
So if you have
just
an Xbox,
like your video games.
Yeah, if you have an Xbox One S or an X that are going to be like relegated to your bedroom, like when you get the Series X, if that's going to go in your living room, you can just, the controllers will work, all the controllers will work on either system.
Everywhere.
Or if you aren't able to get a Series X on day one and you want to treat yourself to just a nice, kind of feel like you're part of the team
you could just
be like, you know, I'm just going to get the Series X controller. And come.
I wonder what their price point will be.
I have speculated.
It'll be 60?
No, 70. Because we've seen the price of controllers across the industry, not just Microsoft. Mm-hmm. The price of controllers has gone up $10 every generation.
Yeah. I think the Pro is 70, right? The Switch Pro?
You're correct. Yeah, and we just talked about how the fit, the materials and the build quality has gotten better, and that doesn't come for free.
Nope.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'd be happy if they're still $60 controllers, but my expectation is that it's going to be.
Your expectation?
Hey-o.
Series expect.
This is why we can't let you two sit next to each
other. Pretty low hanging. True. Pretty.
It's a show of low.
Look, we all need to grab one here and again.
All right. So the last topic I want to talk about, because we're already like, I don't know, 35, 40 minutes into this bonus episode here. A big topic. Well, actually, sorry. I want to talk about the games, and I want to talk about kind of where we think Microsoft goes from here. So with regard to the games, Brandon Tyrell,
hey, you
are probably the biggest fan here at IGN of a game called Hellblade: Senua's Sacrifice.
You know, I've heard good things, but
never got around to finishing.
Which is, of course, Ninja.
No, I did. I absolutely finished it.
Ninja Theory, one of the newish first party studios at Microsoft.
Yeah,
they made Hellblade prior to the Microsoft
acquisition. They're not a new studio. They've been around forever.
Correct. They're new to Microsoft. They're new to the first-party family.
They developed one of my favorite games of all time, which is Enslaved. which is a great
game. Then they made DMC before
DMC
5.
Is back. Yeah, they've done some really good stuff over the years. And now under the Microsoft umbrella, of course, they came out at E3 this year and said, hey, we have this project called Bleeding Edge. It's a multiplayer game. But we also are working on a big single-player thing. Don't worry about it. We'll get to that. So we've got Bleeding Edge, which is has a release date, March 24th. But they went ahead and the first... I guess the first game they officially showed off on a Series X, because the Halo Infinite presentation last year, they didn't explicitly say this was running on Project Scarlet.
True.
Hadn't been acknowledged. Yeah.
Presumably it was running on a PC.
The Hellblade thing did say in-engine.
And that's what I'm referring to. Yeah, okay. So the Hellblade 2, Senua's Saga.
Senua.
Thank you. Senua's Saga. I gotta get that right.
Here it says Senua's Sage.
Total typo.
It was a late night and an early morning.
The running in real time on a Series X. Brandon Tyrell, tell me about this video game and this trailer from what we know here so far.
I mean, I know as much as you do. Like, so I reviewed Hellblade, Senua's Sacrifice. Also, don't love the fact that they put the subtitle in front of the game.
It's a little strange.
For this one.
It's a little strange.
But, you know, Hellblade was this really stunning sort of cinematic audio journey as well. They do really great things with audio design in that game to make it, you know, simulate voices. The first game, you know, ends kind of open-endedly. So the second game seems like it picks up. And if you played the first game, you understand that, like, this does not have a linear story whatsoever. Like, you could do whatever you wanted within this universe. But... holy crap, that game looks beautiful.
It's all in engine.
It's all stunning, yeah.
And more so than that, I was watching it. I watched it at work, right? And then I went home and
Put it on the big TV?
Yeah, so I did put it on not the big TV, but the big TV in my bedroom. My girlfriend and I were in bed and I was like, you gotta see this thing. You gotta watch this. And she was watching it and she's like, man, all those people look so creepy. Mm-hmm. She's like, oh, who's this girl? I've never seen her in any shows or anything before. And I'm like, she's not real. She's not real. That's a fake person. I mean, she does exist, right? But that's CG. They didn't even look like current generation, like CG. It's not at the Naughty Dog or, you know, the Death Stranding level of CG. It looks photorealistic.
It's becoming this uncanny valley thing where you look over and you think that's a person, and then you're like, oh no, it's not a video game. And
I don't even know if it's a valley anymore. We might have smoothed that right out. There's no valley anymore.
Yeah. And that's the thing too. There were moments where, you know, Senua, and I forget the actress name, the woman who works at Ninja Theory, who plays her. I forget her name, but, you know, when she's, like, doing her facial weird contortions and stuff to the music video, there are moments where you're like, oh, that looks a little funny. But I think that's more just the subject matter. I don't think that's the actual technology. I think it's just supposed to look a little uncomfortable.
Yes, yeah. That was what I got from it. Yeah. Absolutely.
But the lighting in it looks fantastic. Even the environments were incredible. And then what really struck me was there was a scene where you have a bunch of people in masks with torches and they're sort of walking through this wood and it's getting darker in every shot. And then, you know, a big pyre erupts behind them all. And the depth of the shadows and the lighting on it, sort of it looks like you look outside. Like, lighting is always really hard to get to make it appear as though you were seeing it through the naked eye. And this... it's almost indistinguishable.
Well, showing off that ray tracing, probably.
Yeah, probably.
Hardware ray tracing. Yeah, good
stuff.
Anyway,
that game is going to be fantastic.
And no date at all given, which is fine for now.
It's still kind of early, right?
They said we'd like to show you something that is early in development. Right. So it's not going to be 2020.
No.
Sure.
No, we'll not be launching with Series X.
Right.
You know, maybe 2021, hopefully. It's just some point. I think we need to... You know, Microsoft has trained us to expect the few first-party releases we get from them a year to generally be in the fourth quarter, in the fall. Mm-hmm. And I think it's they've got enough studios, and it is, as I'm about to tell you, it is time to stop that, to retrain our brains to not expect everything Microsoft does in the fall anymore, starting in 2020, because we did get... we got a new trailer for Ori and the Will of the Wisps, another game that you and I both, everybody adores.
Adore that series, yeah.
Game's stunning. This new trailer, it looks more beautiful than ever, and I don't know how.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely gorgeous. Showed off a lot of new elements. And then a little bit of a surprise at the end of the trailer with a release date that's different from the one they had already given.
And they didn't really acknowledge it.
No, they didn't, and that's fine. I mean, it's so it had been slated for February 11th. It will now be out on March 11th. So just a quick, just a one-month push. No big deal. Wait, let them.
What's the big game in February?
It was going to be Ori and the Will of the Wisps. That was going to be the their first party title of the year.
Yeah. I mean, just collectively throughout the entire industry. There was another big one in February.
Oh, well, we have this Last of Us 2 had gotten delayed. It was going to be
February. Yeah.
And I'm sure there's one or two other third-party games in February.
I think Final Fantasy 7's February.
No, it's March 3rd, I believe. Very beginning of March.
Right there, then.
There is something in February.
But in any case.
Ori was the big thing that I was thinking of as far as coverage goes. Yeah. So I'm not too sure.
So we got the new trailer and the new release date for Ori and the Will of the Wisps and Miranda Sanchez. Gears Tactics, you've been calling for this video game to be shown and acknowledged for months.
Yes.
We got nothing at E3. We got nothing at XO19. We got nothing at Gamescom. But we got a lot at the Game Awards, including, I want you to talk, please talk about the game, and then we've got an April 28th release date. Only PC mentioned, however, despite Rod Ferguson, wasn't it on this show? Didn't he confirm right here that it's coming to Xbox?
Oof, I don't know.
So
Gears Tactics, yes.
It must be later, but in any case, Gears Tactics, Miranda.
Yes, so I'm super excited to set 12 years before the events of Gears of War for the first one with a whole new team starring a guy named Gabe Diaz. You might remember that last name from Kate Diaz.
Hmm.
So it's really cool to see them wanting to like flesh out other teams, as we kind of saw with like their side story for Escape, which is super great. And of course, this is a tactics game, so kind of in the XCOM's turn-based style. The thing that I'm really excited about is they keep emphasizing how it's fast-paced. Turn-based stuff, sometimes you do want to take your time, but with Gears, you know, like as a shooter, like there is already that strategy when you're doing cover-based combat. And so kind of evolving that in like this weird tactical way that's like specifically turn-based is going to be really neat. I like that we're already seeing people get chainsawed. We're already seeing some good shotguns to the face. There's a lot of promising stuff. Obviously, it's still a Gears
Brumax.
Yes, we got the Brumax. We got boss fights. And it's going to be a longer game too, which is especially exciting to see how they can kind of stretch Gears into a longer story, because the shooter campaigns that we have right now aren't super long.
10 to 15 hours,
yeah,
roughly.
I think they said this was like 40 hours.
They specifically said 40-plus hour campaign.
Which is super exciting, because I love the Gears universe. And like, if I can spend more time there and just getting to know different squads that you can customize, that is awesome.
Yeah.
Now, they also... Like, go ahead, Brandon.
It looked like you had your own customizable, creatable character, right? And again, I was working during the trailer, but...
I think so.
I saw like a bunch of...
So it looked like there's customization options.
Okay.
Which... Rod Ferguson has confirmed on Twitter that there are no microtransactions for this. Everything is earned in game. Nope. It's just stream there. Yep.
I did look like Miranda that I don't think it was just trailer camera trickery. It looked like there is a mix between, you know, more traditional XCOM, like kind of an isometric view where you're doing your tactics and planning. But it looked like there were moments where it comes down like to a traditional over the shoulder third person Gears view as well.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, do you think that's similar to like the XCOM thing where if you score a critical hit, it like changes the camera angle and you follow?
Yeah, absolutely. That would make sense. Like there's just too many exciting moves you can make in Gears to not want to showcase that.
Well, and Phoenix Point did this thing, another strategy game that just came out.
Reviews on IGN right now.
They did this thing where with XCOM, you're targeting things to like, and you get like a percentage where in Phoenix Point, it's like a reticle almost. And so it's going down to your shoulder. My bad. It's going down to your shoulder and then it's like a reticle and you're aiming at different points. And then the size of that reticle chooses. So I'm wondering, okay,
it's
maybe
almost it's like a VAT system.
Maybe it's like, maybe it's kind of like that, which could be cool.
Yeah.
I really liked the antagonist, and I'm not steeped enough in the Gears universe to know what that thing is called, but the Locust Wizard, I guess you could call it, flying through the air.
Yeah, different kind of boss characters in the player, special Locust characters who have more power, obviously. So
yeah, I loved that appearance. I mean, because I really, really love a good villain. And so watching it, I don't want to say him because I don't know, watching it talk to the team and like kind of taunt it and be like, you'll never get out of here alive or whatever.
Yeah.
It's really cool because it opens the door to like more lore.
I like how it's kind of funny, but like on the box art, he looks like this evil wizard in a way. Mm-hmm. He's like that kind of classic character that you would see in like a D&D or something. That's just like very, this is the bad guy.
Yeah.
And I just like
this wizard came from the moon.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So this is the Coalition with Splash Damage, another very accomplished developer over the years. And April 28th, apparently just PC for now.
I'm so glad I have a good PC.
Yeah, we'll have to follow up with Rod on that and see what's, you know, do we have to wait for Series X to play this thing on console? And if it does, presumably it will have mouse and keyboard support on the console, but more to dig into there. But nevertheless, another Xbox Game Studios first party release.
And here's the real question. Anytime you merge two good things together, the question is, who's going to review it? Is it going to be the Gears team, or is it going to be the XCOM team with Dan Stapleton?
So, Dan Stapleton and Moran.
Right. It's like, I don't have the biggest history with strategy games, but it would be a fun one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll see.
Be good. I reviewed Halo Wars 1, even though I wasn't and haven't been a particularly big strategy game guy. I just love my Halo.
A little bit of XCOM. I play Fire Emblem. You know, there's all different kinds of stuff.
Yeah. So real quick, I wanted to just go over, I know I did this recently, but it's now revised, the first half of 2020. So not the second half with Series X. The first half of 2020. Check out the first party avalanche that we are getting. Again, the quality of these games remains to be seen. You know, there's certainly the first one I'm going to name is one that I would be astounded if it wasn't fantastic. So we now, instead of February, we're starting this first-party avalanche in March with Ori and the Will of the Wisps, which I think is as close to a sure thing quality-wise as Microsoft has right now. I mean,
it would be insane if that game's not great.
Right. The first one was phenomenal. You and I, Brandon, we played it at E3 last year, at Will of the Wisps at E3 last year. There's the odds of this being not just good but really, really good are extraordinarily high.
Here's a better way to caveat that. The odds of this being better than the first one, I don't know if it can be. Like, that's how good this series is.
If we didn't quite have the water tower, like, just maybe let's ratchet the frustration down. I like the challenge, but maybe not quite there.
I didn't have a hard time with it.
Oh, look at this guy.
Just saying.
Look at this guy.
Just saying.
All right, so March 11th, Ori and the Will of the Wisps. The same month, March 24th, is Bleeding Edge from Ninja Theory.
Which, you know, we don't know a whole lot about, but we know it's...
Well, we played it.
We played it. Yeah.
I mean,
played
melee brawler. And,
it's fun. We had a good time.
Yeah.
Miranda and I played together with the... Yeah.
We won.
Do we know what, like, the... Did you really?
Nice. Yeah, we beat Sean Finnegan
and
his
did.
Buddy. Sorry, Shark.
Daddy,
we rule
pro
over
gamers.
Here.
Do we know what, like, the post-launch support plan and all that stuff is for yet?
I don't think so.
Okay.
We don't know, but I would assume that they have something planned out.
In April, we don't have a date yet, but I went back and verified this last night. The most recent official trailer for Minecraft Dungeons, which is a recent trailer, it does say April 2020, but there's just no date yet. So some point in April, we're getting Minecraft Dungeons. Then on April 28th, the aforementioned Gears Tactics. And then in May, but with no specific date yet, Wasteland 3. So you are talking consecutive months with multiple first-party releases,
right.
Two apiece in March, two in end April, one in May, and then at some point, maybe, I can't promise this is in the first half, but the Cuphead's Delicious Last Course, additional campaign DLC there is maybe going to be in the first half. They had just said 2020 for that, so we'll see there. That there's no word from Studio MDHR yet, so you know we'll see what happens on that. And then same thing, Battletoads, that could end up landing some point in the first half of 2020 as well. So really ramping up the first party releases ahead of Series X's launch, and I think that's really important and really wonderful for Microsoft. They're going to be building some good momentum heading into Series X's launch, as opposed to just trying to have a good, like, they're already going to be doing the right stuff and putting out games and just getting the good vibes flowing heading towards the fall with Halo Infinite on day one. And again, I would be shocked if Forza Motorsport 8 wasn't a day one launch title for the Series X.
You know what's insane is most of these we already knew about before they finished their spending spree on studios.
True.
Which means that we've got a ton. Oh, the first couple of years are going to be so good.
Yeah. I mean, Phil said last night at the Game Awards, all 15 studios hard at work on, you know, the most diverse crop of new games they've ever had. So, yeah, this is, again, Microsoft walking the walk and not just talking the talk. They are doing everything they need to do. So,
and granted, it took a generation to get here. But
they're doing it.
We're here now.
And I'm really curious. I know this is a topic for another time, and I'm sure we'll revisit this a couple times. But I'm really curious what day one on Series X is going to look like. Because, you know, Halo's the big gun, and they want it to be, and they're counting on it to be.
Yep.
And then if Forza's there as, you know, a nice return in a very pretty big way from turn 10 after a year off. They took a year off this year with Forza. But, you know, I expect there's going to be one, maybe two other, maybe not AAA level, maybe like a bit of a smaller scope first-party game. But I would expect there's probably one or two first-party games that will launch on day one with Series X that we don't know about yet.
Right.
Yeah. And not new, but like Cyberpunk and Microsoft are so just like together.
They got a marketing thing going, yeah.
So I do kind of wonder if they're kind of like backdoor dealing, like, hey, we know Cyberpunk's coming out in April or whatever.
April, yeah.
Give us that game of the year.
And they'll be like, hey, but like, yeah, give us some sort of game of the year Xbox, not Scarlet, Series X edition that will launch with the Series X. You know, maybe not even a whole, but like.
They'd already said they're not doing that.
Yeah, they said they won't do that. So the next gen versions of Cyberpunk won't be at launch with these consoles.
Yeah.
I think it'll go in
patch or nothing.
I think it'll go in parity with the PC version at some point, right?
Mm.
And by the way, I managed to leave one out. There are so many first party games in the first half of next year. I left out the early access release or game preview release of Grounded. Yeah. So that's another one. Yeah. Another first party game that maybe it's not done, but it's you will be able to play it in a form.
And also
in the spring.
Yeah, look at what they have ongoing as well, right? Like, it'd be crazy not to line up some sort of huge Sea of Thieves event for Series X when that thing launches. And,
definitely.
You know, there's a lot of stuff right now, and the stable is growing, and it's going to be healthy enough that when you add it to third parties, you know, the sports games and the shooters and all that, it's going to be a ton of stuff to play on Series X.
So there's one other thing I wanted to bring up that, and correct me if I'm wrong, I may be wrong on this. This was just an idle thought I had, but when I watched the Senua's Sage, see, I read my own typo, Saga.
Saga.
Senua's Saga, Hellblade 2, I'm going to the Hellblade 2 trailer, I thought, wait a second. Is this the first AAA, top-tier, first-party, narrative-driven game announced by Microsoft outside of Halo and Gears, which are their just pillar things, like just something new, something else? Is this the first one that they've announced since Quantum Break? Because Scalebound got canceled.
Yeah.
That never made it. From
Rest in peace.
Everwild it was just announced, but that is clearly a co-op driven game.
Right.
Yeah. I'm not saying it doesn't have a narrative, but as far as like a single player narrative, you know, that, which is, but it's the Sony kind of game that Xbox gamers are looking for, right? Which is what Hellblade 2 is. Quantum Break's the last one I can think of. I mean, there was ReCore a few years ago, but that was never a big budget AAA. You know, that was a smaller.
There's a reason for that.
Yeah, exactly. Unfortunately, so
that was Inafune, right?
It was what his studio was one of the part of the team working on that.
Okay.
But yeah, I can't think of another one.
Keeping her pen.
She'll be back. I think you're right. I think it's probably, I think Quantum Break really is the last one.
Which shipped in 2016, 3.5 years ago.
Oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
Which just, again, and I don't say that to super, illustrate.
Super lucky stuff.
I'm not trying to knock Microsoft. I'm just trying to say like.
No, like.
This Hellblade 2 is exactly.
Yes.
Finally what diehard Xbox fans and players have been wanting and 100%. Waiting for, and they delivered it in a big, beautiful way. This is such a great trailer. The game looks amazing.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, real time on the Series X. So it's just, I'm celebrating it. That's my point here. I'm celebrating this.
And that's the biggest thing. Microsoft has had the ecosystem and the console and the support and the infrastructure, but it hasn't had the God of War and the Death Stranding and the
games
and the Uncharted's and yeah, the Ghost of Tsushima, which is Ghost.
Which Ghost,
singular?
Ghost, one ghost.
Of
one
Tsushima.
Ghost. One ghost.
There's
I've been
ghost.
I've been typing it wrong for like a year and a half.
Oh.
So Ghost of
our SEO. Tsushima.
I know, right? Oh, if only.
That looks great too, by the way. I'm really looking forward to playing that on PS4.
It really did. Yeah. Sam and I were looking at it and we're like, man, that terrain looks fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, forget the samurai. Let's just make a planet Earth.
Well, they're
game.
Just going crazy with the lighting.
Yes.
Anyways, that game looks nice.
Those leaves are basically made out of light.
Yeah.
But this, you know, Hellblade 2 is the kind of.
It's the answer to that
it's
question.
It's the answer. And it's the kind of game that I hope it ends up being that, like, 9.5 or 10 out of 10 kind of game, mm-hmm. narrative single-player game that we've been waiting for from Microsoft for all these years. So,
well, dude, like, Hellblade 1 was made without being a first-party game.
That's right.
Yep.
They made it on their own.
And it debuted on the Sony stage, like, mm-hmm. 5 years before it was announced.
Sony was going to publish it, and then they backed out,
right? They backed out, and Ninja Theory ended up self-publishing.
Yeah. And then it came to Xbox late, a little later, as I recall,
like
right?
A year.
I believe it came to Xbox.
Of course, now it's in Game Pass. And
6 months later, yeah.
Was it 6 months?
Just
might
play
have
it.
Been that long. Hmm. Anyway, imagine what that team can do now.
With resources.
With a budget.
With more resources.
With the resources, yes, the budget. Yeah. That tech's already done. I mean, because the big thing about that tech was real-time facial recognition.
Yeah, well, because that's the thing is, like, in Hellblade, there is, like, Senua, and she, you know, she's technically, like, one of the only characters in the game, yeah. But then she's visited by these like visions, and those aren't Dependian. Technically CG. Those are just people. Like you look at the behind the scenes, and they're in costume.
The FMVs, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, if you watch a behind the scenes featurette, it shows how they film them in like creative angles with lighting, and then just like in post.
And then put them in there. And so you're like, wow, that looks real. And you're like, well, that's because that is a real guy. Where this doesn't. This is not that, though.
Yeah, so there is – it's still online. You can go find it. But at one of the Sony conferences – again, God, I wish I could remember her name because she's so excellent. But the woman who plays Senua came out with that whole facial rig on and then just basically had a mental breakdown on stage and, like, showed all the different anguish in her face.
Well, what's crazy about her is –
it was all translated in real time.
Yeah.
So now that tech is already done – and they have a ton of money, and the engine is in tip-top, and they have a story that they can branch out. There are multiple characters in that game now. It seems like it's going to be a much bigger experience.
If I'm pronouncing it – thank you.
Melina Jurgens.
Yes. I believe that's how it's
going. Well, and the thing is Hellblade, that was like her first acting job. Like, well, that's the whole story there, she was a video editor.
Yeah, right.
Like that.
I think she was video editor, maybe.
And it's like, oh, you're going to come be a stand-in or something like that. Yeah. And then they were like – never mind, you're Senua. You're
really
amazing.
You're really good. But we couldn't get ScarJo anyway.
it's just so great to see. And again, for anybody that's thinking, well, are you guys really serious about Hellblade 2 being that high of a caliber? Yeah, I mean, these guys touched on it earlier in the podcast. The Ninja Theory's history is not simply Hellblade. They are not a one-hit wonder.
Oh, my
God. DMC and Enslaved, and they've done some other stuff prior to that as well. So,
fun thing, when I was like, hey, I didn't realize you could write about video games for a living. I didn't know games media existed. And I was like, I'll try my hand at it. And so I wrote a review about Enslaved because it was the most affecting game that I had played at that time. And it was fantastic.
All right. The last
That's the
topic,
game that got me in.
We are running out of time here, but the final topic I wanted to bring up is – what's next for Microsoft? So the playbook from last generation, as far as the rollout of the console and how all the announcements happen, is out the window. And I think we'd all agree that's fine because it didn't go well for Microsoft last time. Mm-hmm. So here's where we stand. We know the basic specifications of the console, 4 times more powerful. We know it's based on, you know, AMD chipset, et cetera, et cetera. We know it uses GDDR6 RAM. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, they want to be able to have you suspend. They want to be able to have you instantly resume
pause state for multiple applications.
From multiple games,
yeah, multiple
than just
games.
One game.
Yeah.
No loading times. You know, the whole thing with the
120 hertz, which is going to be kind of nuts for most TVs
hertz.
Or 60 hertz.
Yeah. So
but we'll see.
We know a lot of the core sort of technical details. Yeah. We know the name of it. We know what it looks like. We know the controller. So the question I have for you guys is, What is next for Microsoft? Is E3 the next thing? Will we still get a Series X event between now and E3? I want to hear what you guys think Microsoft's next move is.
I definitely think they're going to hold everything for E3.
You think so? Okay. Yeah.
I think it just makes most sense for them to hold it now. I was actually kind of surprised that they showed so much at the Game Awards. Yeah. Granted, a lot of people are watching it. The Game Awards is kind of becoming more and more known with like big reveals.
Absolutely.
I was a little disappointed that it was kind of just earlier on the show. Mm-hmm. So I had less time to just like freak out with all of you about it. And
that would have been a cool closer.
I more or less zoned out of the Game Awards after this reveal, because I was busy dealing with the aftermath of it internally,
right.
And how to cover it after. So I actually need to go back and catch up on a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. But it's better. Like at the end, the metrics, there's absolutely more people watching at the beginning of the Game Awards than there are at the end.
For sure.
Oh, right? Yeah.
So you probably didn't want to close. If you're Microsoft, you don't want to be the last thing.
It's probably good, actually, because I was watching metrics for some of the streams, and the viewer count when Green Day started playing, it like kind of leveled off and then just started doing this.
So, well, and they wanted to show Hellblade 2.
Yeah.
And they couldn't do that before.
That's the thing as well. So I was wondering, like, why not announce Hellblade at XO19? Because they probably weren't ready to announce the console then. And those announcements were so ingrained with each other.
And kind of given with how they wanted to present that with a wider audience, I think E3 would be the space to do that. Mm-hmm. I guess you could hold your own thing at this point. But I think because they've already shown what the console looks like, they've shown the name, it's not really necessary to have their own event for it.
Yeah. The only thing I'm worried about is if they don't do it and Sony does some sort of off.
If they do some February thing, then they're going to kind of own that limelight for however many months.
Yes.
And that's, I agree with you guys. I think there's got to be I agree with you, Miranda, in a vacuum.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in the reality of Sony also having some cards left up their sleeve.
To play.
That if Sony does something, I don't think Microsoft can afford or should or will wait till E3 to say more. Because that's what happened last generation.
Mm-hmm.
Is Sony showed their hand in February. They were the first ones to say, here's the PlayStation 4, it's February 2013. Here's the PS4, here's all kinds of stuff about it, here's all our developer support, and et cetera, et cetera. And then Microsoft said and did nothing until May. It was 3 months of just everybody talking about PS4, mm-hmm. nobody talking about Microsoft. And while, yes, Microsoft has said a lot of stuff, I'm not sure that they're going to want to let Sony just have the last word for months and months ahead of E3.
Especially because the rest of this year is going to amplify whatever people know about the consoles already. So if Sony does go first and talk a little bit more about the PS5 in early spring, when Last of Us 2 drops and everyone plays it and everyone loves it, assuming they will, which I'm sure, you know, it's going to be a great game. That's like, man, I love that experience. I can't wait to get more of that for the PS5. And that's what people are talking about. So whatever the baseline is for understanding about these consoles is going to be amplified for this for next generation with the games that are coming out in the next, you know, in the next year, before the consoles launch. So they really do have to just keep up constant pressure, because you're right. If they went today, if nothing happens and then they go at E3 again, that's half a year lost.
Yeah. It's 6 months.
And let's say Sony does a thing in February and they show their console. That's an hour long of, this is just coming from a, like a video editor kind of, you know, B-roll standpoint. That's an hour long of, you know, showing the console, you know, Mark Cerny holding the controller, like from the PS4 event, showing different games. It's a whole lot of like footage of the console out, where right now we only have a very short trailer. Mm. And that trailer is going to have to live from now until
E3. So with it.
And it's like, I'm thinking of a video right now. If we were to talk about PlayStation 5 and Scarlet or Series X, like right now, the Series X has B-roll, where the PlayStation 5 technically doesn't even have a logo yet, you know? So it's like,
we're going to see a lot of that 4 seconds of Godfall gameplay over the next 6 months.
Exactly, because that's the only thing we can talk about right now, is like when we say PlayStation 5 in a convo or B-roll or anything, you're showing Godfall. You're showing Godfall because that's all you have. You don't have a logo. Maybe you could show the dev kit, which that's not a thing. But now we have a little bit of a trailer. But then if Sony goes and does this big show, that's
a lot. It's a back and forth, right? It's a back and forth, and I think Microsoft will presumably, hopefully, has an envelope A, a scenario A, and a scenario B. Yep.
And then a little red button in the center of the screen.
So, you know, scenario, maybe envelope A is that is Sony doesn't do anything till E3, so they don't do anything till E3. But if Sony does something, all right, let's go to plan B and, and let's, you know, put a game showcase together with Forza and with Halo and maybe with a little more Hellblade and maybe with a couple of other little things ahead of E3 where they can then just go even, you know, even further with all of it.
My ideal dream scenario, and I know we're running out of time, my ideal dream scenario is Microsoft goes in spring or maybe late spring, like blows the console out, and then E3 is all about games. So you have 4 months to sit there and say, like, oh, man, I got to play this game. And so when they drop in holiday, you're like, oh, that's my Halo Infinite machine.
Right. Mm-hmm. Like, there's so many features that could still discuss for Series X that we don't know, like, anything about, like, how it runs, what the menus look like, mm-hmm. how just playing together, sharing games, whatever that does functions. Like, they could do so many different innovations. If there's any sort of, like, voice support, you never know.
You're so right. They could show the lack of loading times. Yeah. They could show the interface. Yeah,
Without necessarily doing the big game push, because I think they do need to save some of that for E3.
They have to do something for
E3.
Well,
you have to split it up.
Even less importantly, they could show the console and controller itself. It's like we're seeing CGI things, you know what I mean? Right. Like,
true.
Being able to actually see the console running and stuff like that could be really cool.
Yeah, man.
All right, guys.
Save E3 for the games.
We have come to the end of Unlocked 423. Well, hopefully this makes up for our MIA episode last week from our technical difficulties.
Yeah. Yep.
We gave you two this week, but we will be back next week. We do still have one more show planned before the holidays, episode 424, which will be a palindrome.
Nice.
So I've got a fun topic planned for that, plus any other follow-up news that comes out of the Game Awards, et cetera, et cetera. Quick note from me, you can follow me on Twitter at @DMC_Ryan, and you can tweet me about my Master Chief Collection re-review, which went up this morning. Spoiler alert, I gave it a 9.5. Which is now higher than the original review, which I actually admit in the text, I've talked about this before. I feel like I got the original review wrong. We made a lot of process changes here in large part because of that game. But anyway, the point is what a redemption story Master Chief Collection is. It's phenomenal. If you get a chance, go read or watch
my
Master Chief Collection review.
It's very good.
And just join me in celebrating how wonderful this game is and what such a huge amount of credit's due to 343 for, you know, they took their lumps and they have put in the time and the effort, and they have not only not just the time and effort, but they did the work properly.
Like,
it works and it's phenomenal. I'm just so grateful that Master Chief Collection is finally what it was originally envisioned to be. It's just fantastic.
Especially because you can take that and give it to a kid and be like, hey, here's my childhood.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
it's in 4K.
But it's in 4K.
It is kind of unprecedented. Like, there have been other collections of remasters of series games in a series, but all of them with multiplayer that functions, like, it's three generations of Halo multiplayer that all works.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not sure that's been done in a package like this before. Mm-hmm. So
sure.
There's a lot of credit due, and it's just so great. So check that out. And then Unfiltered drops next week. I'll promote that on next week's show. But it's Stig Asmussen, the director of Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order. So check out that. That's going to drop on Tuesday. Brandon?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Brandon Tyrell. Man, so much going on. I don't even know what to say. But yeah, check out Ryan's Halo Reach review, and I'll figure out something else to promote next week.
Excellent. Mark?
Star Wars is next week.
That's true.
It's going to be good times.
Yes.
It's going to be good times.
I'm excited.
So I'll make some Star Wars videos for you guys. Yeah. Why not?
Love it.
Yeah.
Miranda?
Hello. You follow me at Havoc Rose. Sorry, I disappeared earlier. I had to publish a thing, which you can check out on IGN.com. We got an exclusive clip for an animated series called Franklin and Ghost. It's based off a comic book, so you should check that out. And also check out our Best of Awards. We have a lot rolling out.
Yes.
We just put out, we already have all of our Game Awards up. We just put up anime this weekend. We're going to have some comics, and we have even more coming up. So Sure, check this out.
Fantastic.
Yeah, we're also doing our look back, look forward features. So, like, biggest Xbox games of next year, all that stuff is going to roll out starting next week. So,
All right, we will see you for one more Unlocked in 2019 next week. Until then, have a great week and weekend, everybody. See ya.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.